departing the realm of the visual, one encounters pure sound used to shape poems. David Rothman writes in Verse and the Numerical Imagination that for the purest poetry, the meaning of verse is the beauty of music, perceived through a pronunciation that requires no diacritical and therefore graphic artifice. The metaphorical music of verse structure was once indeed music. He is not implying that the poem as heard takes precedence over, or precedes, for that matter, the written poem. But there is an ideal to be found in sound alone. For example, rhyme may lend cohesion to non-metrical lines. Consider Ogden Nash, whose epigrammatic style, even in his longer poems, relies on extraordinarily strong whole rhymes. Irregularly lineated couplets, dripping with sarcasm, define his style. We wait for big, hammering rhymes as we might anticipate the closing of a musical passage, as in More About People. Note the double word rhymes. When people aren't asking questions, they're making suggestions. And when they're not doing one of those, they're either looking over your shoulder or stepping on your toes. And then, as if that weren't enough to annoy you, they employ you. A contemporary poet who makes use of this technique, one no less sardonic, is Frederick Seidel. He seems to derive perverse pleasure from chaining lines of dramatically different lengths together with chiming, eerily naive rhyme, as in Poem by the Bridge at Ten Shin. And yet we had a newspaper that mattered once, and that is sad, but that was when it mattered. Do I matter? That is true. I don't matter, but I do. I lust for fame, and after never finding it, I was never the same. I roared into the heavens, and I soared, and landed where I started, on a flexing diving board. Poets also spread rhyme across a poem to give an impression of isolation or dissolution. Laura Kosciuszko, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, uses irregular and sparse rhyme to display the gradual unraveling of a speaker in Miss Congeniality. Some rhymes fall close together and relate musically, while stray rhymes reside as outliers, visible only to the eye, and almost imperceptible over such cold distances to the ear. Note the rhyme of floor, repeated, bore, war, internal, shore, as well as the slant rhyme despair, spread out over fully 13 lines. They praised my feet, the shoes on my feet on the floor, and then the sense of despair I evoked with my smile, the song I sang, the speech I gave about peace in praise of the war. Oh, they could not grant me the title I wanted, so they gave me the title I bore, and stubbornly refused to believe I was dead long after my bloody mattress had washed up on the shore. Kosciuszko stretches rhyme very nearly beyond its capacity to hold a poem together, but this performance highlights the disintegrating personality of the poem's central figure, who eventually falls apart altogether and perhaps commits suicide. K. Ryan's use of free verse rhyme is more muscular and taut, suited to her shorter epigrammatic style. In a Paris Review interview, she described what she terms recombinant rhyme. Internal rhymes harmonize with end rhymes while working against other unrhymed and jammed line endings to create palpable tension. A formal predecessor to her technique can be found in Sunlight on the Garden by Louis MacNeice. The sky was good for flying, defying the church bells and every evil iron siren and what it tells. The earth compels. We are dying, Egypt, dying, and not expecting pardon, hardened in heart anew, but glad to have sat under thunder and rain with you, and grateful, too, for sunlight on the garden. The tail rhyme in the first and third lines of each stanza is immediately echoed in the first foot of each subsequent line. The first rhyme of the stanza is echoed in the last line, while the second, fourth, and fifth lines share a single tail rhyme. The scheme results in a beautiful poem that captures the anxiety and fading elegance of the 1930s generation on the eve of the Second World War, when, as Auden lamented, not a word of poetry could have prevented the horrors. Similarly, Ryan's recombinant rhyme produces disquiet worthy of Hitchcock. We find the technique used to perfection in a poem like Shark's Teeth, from Ryan's 2005 collection, The Niagara River, as the oral contours of the poem grate against its visual ones, causing a sense of jaggedness and unease. Everything contains some silence. Noise gets its zest from the small shark's tooth-shaped fragments of rest angled in it. Forget for a moment that the passage itself resembles a shark's tooth. It is in the kingdom of sound that Ryan works wonders. Silence is pressed uncomfortably close to noise, and the two share a delightful sibilance. The further effect of small shark's tooth-shaped is to bring the tongue right up against the sharp edge of the teeth when pronounced, mimicking the shark's bite. Fragments are angled, just as the two words themselves balance against each other sonically, while gets zest, one imagines the scraped rind of an orange skin, which might equate to human skin rubbed against prickly shark skin, and rest cut a rhyme series straight through the poem's center. A magnificently designed acoustic entity, relying not at all on regular rhyme or meter, such a poem is a marvel and hard to surpass.